This episode of Conversation is supported by the generous donations of D-Train and Delicious. You can support us too at truthmeats.com. Click on the donate link. And good afternoon. You're on truthmeats.com and you're with Verilicious and Medi. And today we have a bit of a topic. We are going to talk about rose-colored glasses. Now, this is just a bit of a follow-on from us talking about color psychology and how it affects us. Thank you to Rick Esoteric, who sort of put that our way. We were talking about the blue light before, and we've got a lovely picture here of Miley Cyrus wearing her rose-coloured specs and a bit of a fashion icon that she is. So let's get into it. Medi?
Absolutely. Let's get right into it. Thanks for having me on, like always, and please go ahead and lead the way.
And we hope that Beachy's recovering. We heard that she was a little bit under the weather. So apologies, our Wednesday arvo has turned into Thursday arvo this week. So Beachy, we'll be happy to have you back next week. All right.
That's right. So, rose-colored spirit, it's still Wednesday here in the States. So, you know.
Oh, beautiful. It's Wednesday. It's Wednesday arvo. We still are Wednesday arvo. Okay. All right. So, rose-colored glasses. So, we've got the term of the rose-colored glasses. It became a figurative speech back in 1840s. Now, why are we talking about rose-colored glasses? Well, let's have a look at where this phrase first came from. So there was a guy named Thomas Hughes who was born in 1822. He died in 1896. He was a British jurist, reformer, and novelist. And he used to write books. He was known for Tom Brown's School Days. Now, I'm thinking this is probably based on him, considering that he attended the rugby school in 1834 to 1842, and that his book series was possibly inspired by his life. Now, why we're mentioning him is because he also grew up during the Victorian era, which was 1820 to 1914. And we have talked about Queen Victoria before and her era and what all that entailed. So rose-coloured glasses, what does it mean? So it's to see the world in a more favourable light, seeing through a pink tint that the world suddenly looks to be more friendlier and a happy place. Who doesn't want to be in a happy place? Medi? We all want to be in a happy place, don't we? Are you in a happy place right now?
I'm in a happy place right now. And yeah, I'd say by and large, it's kind of what we all have a propensity to gravitate towards. And then just to add a little bit on the rose red tinted lens itself, it is 600 nanometers in wavelength.
The wavelength. Is that what we're talking about? The wavelength?
I think we're talking about the last time we were talking.
That's cool. And you do, I do believe, are you on a red wine tonight?
That's wine? Right. Just for the occasion. Yeah. I should have gone a rosé. That would have been more fitting. But
that would have been more fitting. Exactly. That would be good. So looking at talking about color and how these affect our eyes. And we were talking last week about what blue light does to our eyes, when we see it and what it does to our body and how it affects us. Now, coloured glasses can do particular things as well. So there was a study done at the University of Toronto in 2009, and it showed how our moods can change and how our visual cortex operates by the study of colour, especially with coloured glasses and lenses. Now, this was published in the Journal of Neuroscience. So when I sort of read that, it sort of goes back to what we were talking to. We're talking about when we're talking about the blue light and how it affects us. So obviously when we see things, the light, the waves, all these things come into play, how it's processed in our brain and then how it affects us overall. So now this study goes to explaining the use of the functional magnetic resonance imaging. So we were talking about waves before. So obviously colors have a wavelength. They will vary from color to color. Now, if you put, I think, a magnetic field to some of them, it will change the wave, I believe. So
really quick, which 2009 study are you referencing, just so I can make sure I'm on the same page?
So this is the University of Toronto, from the University of Toronto, and it was published in the Journal of Neuroscience.
Do you know the title of the article?
I have no idea. Oh, I think it said something about rose-colored glasses, possibly.
Let's see.
Yeah, I think it was, what does rose-colored glasses actually do? Was the title.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I found it.
Yeah. Excellent. Yeah. So they did, what were they doing? Let's have a look. Okay, so, they found subjects. Yeah. With the positive
mindset.
So the
U of T team, so they're using functional MRI to examine how our visual cortex processes sensory information when in good, bad, and neutral moods. They found that donning the rose-colored glasses of a good mood is less about the color and more about the expansiveness of the view. The researchers first showed subjects a series of images designed to generate a good, bad, or neutral mood. Subjects were then shown a composite image featuring a face in the center, surrounded by place images, such as a house. To focus their attention on the central image, subjects were asked to identify the gender of the person's face. Good luck in that day and age. When in a bad mood, the subjects did not process the images of places in the surrounding background. However, when viewing the same images in a good mood, they actually took in more information. So this is more from a psychological aspect than a wavelength perspective. Interesting.
Yeah, but it's interesting, though, that they are using the MRI, because people get MRI done anyway, right? So if we have anything wrong with our head, whatever, there's like, let's go and do an MRI scan to go and figure out what's going on.
So you're pretty close. Just the normal MRI scans that we get are a lot more simplistic in that they're measuring a lot less specific things in the brain. So a functional MRI, typically they're measuring specific responses in specific cortical areas, depending on your reaction or just your interaction with an image that's shown to you. I actually was part of a fMRI study way back in the day, just for extra credit. That's the only slight difference. It's no fun at all. Yeah. It's about a 2-hour long process. Because you have to stare at the screen the whole time, or you're in an MRI machine and blink when you see a particular image based on whatever they're trying to capture. And it's super fascinating, the actual science behind fMRIs. Let's not get too far off the track.
And this could also lead us into other things as well when we're talking about, I believe the subject of MKUltra and all that came up in a talk somewhere as well. So, you know, there's a lot to do with the brain. And we were saying about colors, we were talking about sounds, we're talking about smells. So all these things get processed in the brain. So obviously it's always fascinating to understand how our brain works when we're exposed to all these things as well. So we'll just stay on track about the colored glasses though, because it's interesting what these glasses do. So you've got the rose-colored glasses in particular, they increase the wearer's depth of field and enhance detail. Now, for me, I often just wear sunglasses which are polarized. So that cuts out any glare for me. But to have a look through rose-colored glasses, let's see what it can do. Now, it is said that the world comes into a sharper and brighter focus. Now, when it comes to photography, understanding lenses, you can get a filter with your lenses. So working with color lenses and how and what it does with our photos, I would assume that it would work very similar when we are looking through lenses with our own eyes. So you've got the green lenses. Now, they supposedly be the ones that filter out blue light. Now, this blue light is actually blue light outside blue light, so which is what the sun emits and what we're surrounded by. When we were talking about blue light last week, it was about the artificial blue light that we're being exposed to inside environment, which is our phones, our television, laptops, tablets, and so forth. Yeah, so then we've got the blue and purple lens. So they're supposed to enhance contours while reducing reflective glare. Now, I noticed that when I was playing around with filters, especially when it comes to photography, and just seeing what it says about the lens here, I had to play around with the colors, the blue and purple, to see if it actually did what it said, where it enhanced the contours and reducing the reflective glare. So that's pretty cool. So what have we got? Yellow, orange and gold is excellent for depth perception. And then amber or brown lens is heightened contrast against a green landscape and blue sky. So if you're outdoors, there is all sorts of lenses that you can have to help you see better, I suppose, or reducing glare. So,
well, yeah, it's interesting. I was just looking at the difference between rose-colored glasses and then blue tinted glasses, and they both are specifically designed to either block or filter out blue light. But it's kind of interesting that they're the opposite colors, and that one is more or less filtering based on the exact same wavelength, and one's filtering based on the opposite wavelength.
Yeah, so that's amazing, isn't it? So I guess with that science that that experiment or that study that they were doing was just having a look at how your brain processes the light and images with and without their colored lenses, and seeing how from our eyes how our brains would register it as well. But the only problem with the pink lenses is they said that the warning signs like your traffic lights and your red traffic lights and your stop signs, they can be challenging to see. So obviously it has an effect on color. Even though that it can reduce the blue light effects, it may have an effect on the actual color that's very close to it. So pink with red as well. Yeah. So, so it was interesting to have a little bit of a look into the rose-colored glasses. I mean, I'd like to see the world through rose-colored glasses sometimes. wouldn't we all? Wouldn't the world be a friendlier and happy place? Yeah, it would be quite good. And then just all in all, like most of these glasses you can wear as a fashion statement, really. So a lot of these were popularized by celebrities. So on the Truth Meets show notes here, we have got celebrities like Miley Cyrus. We've got Bono, Elton John.
I'm surprised John Lennon wasn't on this list. He's the first person I think of with rose-colored glasses.
Yeah. So there is quite a few. So the list goes on with that. So, Mehdi, what do you think? Mm-hmm. Do you reckon you get a pair? Rose-colored?
Yeah, I mean, it depends. But I first need to know, is it truly the proper wavelength of light that's going to be refracting coming to my eyes? And then secondly, is there truly no other adverse effect like you're potentially highlighting when we were covering the difference between that and the blue lens? So I don't know. I mean, I'd probably give it a shot, but I would want to make sure I thoroughly researched it first. And it seems like it takes a little bit of digging to really get anything. I just found one semi-decent article I linked to you as far as people actually going into the specific differences and different colored lenses and how it affects your both visual perception and then also neurologically what it's doing.
Yeah, no, it'd be interesting. It's an interesting read, just to know for yourself as well, like what those kind of things do. So, but I was also looking and thinking, Elton John, I mean, check out those glasses. That
exactly
look pretty
right.
cool.
Yeah.
Could you get a pair with a bit of glitter through them as well?
Just a little extra flair, right?
Yeah, a little extra flair.
I wouldn't want extra flair, but I feel like you're already inviting attention just by wearing rose-colored glasses.
Yeah, that's it.
After the break, we'll discuss it more.
No matter what your age,
you're listening to Conversation.
Or your affiliation.
On truthmeets.com.
Let yourself engage.
And now, back to the conversation.
In the art of conversation.
And you're back on truthmeets.com with the Wednesday Arvo crew. We are missing Beachy from our trio today, but I think she will be happy that we are talking about colour since she loves colour as well. I wonder if she would get purple coloured lens since she likes purple. What do you think?
Yeah, it seems like we would all need to get our own perspective coloured lens and just see how we fare with it because the results are all over the place. It's pretty interesting, that study I linked here too. It seems that the highest liked lens as far as just subjective reported experience of liking it was the green color, with 74% of people participating saying that was their preference. And then red/rose was only 48.4%. It seems they use rose and red pretty interchangeably. But yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wonder if the green lens, because it's the one that filters out the blue light, and maybe that because we were talking about blue light, that's the thing that probably affects us the most, because we were talking about how it affects our sleep. It can affect our gut behavior, anything like that. So I'm just wondering if the green actually balances out that blue light. But would it work for the artificial light? Quite possibly. Or could it just be for the blue light that's naturally emitted? Does it say that in that study? Quite possibly.
So it doesn't say specifically, but I would say it's probably more or less the same as long as the wavelength isn't too far off in variation. I'm guessing that they can't be too different between the sun and then the natural blue LEDs. But
yeah.
Let me fact check that real quick.
All right. So that's interesting. I like the fact that it's actually got a wavelength. Like, so things have a wavelength because we have electromagnetic fields, obviously. That surround us as well, and we obviously have that in us to a degree. So I think, in a sense, our bodies are supposed to work in harmony with the environment. So how do we try and balance that out? I think the colour, when we were looking at colour, that was also a good insight to maybe looking at colour therapy and how that can enhance our possibly health and the way we operate in our day-to-day life.
That's right. That's something that's become pretty popular in a lot of psychology, psychiatric settings in the past 5-10 years, the whole red light therapy, where more or less people just sit in front of a bunch of bright red lights, typically 5 or 10 minutes at a time. That is the therapy in itself. So
yeah,
a whole bunch of studies that are linked to that. Who's to say if it's something that is you can actually absorb through your skin versus directly through your retina? I think you likely need to have your eyes open for it to be effective. But I did just link the difference between sun blue light versus LED blue light. So the sun blue light typically is a wavelength between 300 to 500 nanometers, and then the blue LEDs typically use specifically 400 to 490 nanometers. So I think it's more or less going to be blocking the same thing with each respective lens that you're looking through.
Yeah, that's pretty good. It's pretty good that they can see that as well. Yeah, and I find it interesting when we were talking about the blue light, that in that casino, I think, because I hadn't listened to the rest of this podcast, there's so many I've been recommended to listen to a few different ones, but remember how I was saying to you they had like they were generating some form of electricity to alter the waves?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think that happens in a lot of places. I don't know. I often feel like we are experiments, just ongoing experiments in day-to-day life, whether we're going into shopping centres, whether we're just whatever it is. There's why is it always got to be something that they're playing with? They're playing with our psyche, you know, playing with our minds, eyes, sounds. It just overall, I just feel like, is there anything there that's supposed to help us in a positive sense,
like,
rather than a negative sense? You know, that's pretty
and
funny. Yeah,
who even knows if it's experimentation at this point, or if it's deliberate, well-known psychological disturbances that they're sharing? Who knows?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I could be a little bit crazy, but I swear sometimes in the middle of the night I'll be asleep and I will hear sounds. It'll be like a low, low wave, like a radio, like someone talking. through a radio, I'll wake up and I can't hear it. I'll go back to sleep. I can hear it. And no one else can hear it. I can hear it. And I'm like, this is crazy. Someone is playing games with me. Either that or they're experimenting.
How often do you notice this?
Oh, who knows? It could be when I'm like overly tired or stressed out.
No, I'm so not kidding could, because it, ever it since just, we talked about the blue lights, I've really, yeah, I mean, if we know that they're deliberately tampering with our visual acuity, I mean, anything that we're absorbing through that particular sensory process, then why wouldn't they be doing the same with our ears when we're asleep or anything else they could potentially influence?
Yeah, but this is what I also think, though, because I think that people have, like, you know, we were just talking about wavelengths. I think people have different wavelengths as well. And you know how we say we vibe with something or we don't vibe with something or we can feel it, like we have that ability to sense things. And they say the gut, you know, like the gut instinct as well, like you got to learn to listen to your gut because the gut's normally right. So there's obviously something working in harmony with our body. And it could be part of our fight and flight that we have in us. So for me, I'm like, when I hear these sounds, I'm like, I'm not crazy. I'm sure I'm not crazy. But why am I hearing it and no one else is hearing it? Could be that I have a different level, that my body is got a different wave and can hear or see, depending on what type of wavelength is being projected out. So I really think that there's something going on with that.
Well, yeah, when it comes to sound frequencies, especially, I mean, you could have just sharper hearing or just less damaged ears than a lot of other people, myself especially included there. And yeah, you could likely hear a whole bunch of things that I couldn't hear. Do you remember when the mosquito tone, that very loud, high-pitched sound
was a thing? Oh, my goodness, that drove me crazy. Yeah.
Luckily, when that was all the rage, I'd already been to enough live shows where I couldn't hear it ever. It never really affected me negatively. But I remember when I could hear the closest semblance to it, it's like, man, how annoying would that be? It was even higher pitched and something that didn't bother most people, but just me. Yeah, pretty brilliant.
Yeah. It bothers me because some mosquitoes, when I do get the bite, I actually am allergic to it. So I swell up really badly, but it's not with all of them. So whenever I hear that sound, it, like, right next to my ear, it, like, freaks me out. I'm, like, slapping everything around, like, go away, go away. So, you know, well, and I think for me, it's more so because, more so it's because the allergic reaction that I get from it is more for me than anything else, not the fact that it's a mosquito, but just the fact that I know I associate that sound with the allergic reaction that I get and how I swell up. So that's what freaks me out more than anything. So, yeah.
Well, what freaks me out is that mosquitoes seem to not like me at all. For whatever reason, whenever I'm in a crowd, any friends or family I'm with are getting bit, they just don't bite me at all. I guess it's good, but I hope that they aren't sensing something in my blood that isn't tasty or is toxic. I doubt that's actually what's happening, but you know, you got to wonder why am I not getting bit? Someone else next to me is getting bit 20 times.
You're a natural insect repellent.
Yeah, I just got a deep pouring out of my sweat pores. Yeah,
that's a classic.
Hopefully, it's not anything bad. But yeah, all that to say, if you attract mosquitoes, then yeah, I wouldn't be good company to have because they would just all go.
Yeah, I'd just say my blood's too sweet. You know, not that I need any more sugar.
See, you're saying the same thing then. It's like, is mine not sweet enough? And I don't know. They just have chronic low blood sugar and that's what's been affecting me. Anyway.
Oh, that's so funny. It is funny when we think about stuff like that. Yeah, I know that D-Train is like, well, whenever Verilicious, she's around, I don't worry about the mosquitoes because they all go to her. So I'm like, great. Thank you.
I feel like you're doing something right if the parasites want to suck your blood.
Yeah, that's it. Thank you. I feel very privileged. Funny.
Yeah, I'm glad. Yeah, I'll take it.
Yeah. Now, during this week, I was also having a look. Oh, I was going crazy looking at Amazonian women, warrior women. There was just things I was running on a roll on, looking at some mythology, because it sort of brought me back to when I was doing the Egyptian mythology and learning about a little bit of the Egyptians and what their culture brought to us. And absolutely fascinating, which led me to write some lyrics. And that took me a while, actually, because I was getting distracted with one thing after another. And eventually I was just like, yep, this is cool. And I had forgotten that I had this fascination with warrior women. And I was like, why did that come back to me? And I think it was somewhere along the lines on one of the Discord channels, someone had put up something about the Greek history. I was looking into some other history previously as well, and it sort of gelled through, you know. And then it was triggered by an advert for a TV show or a movie or something, and I thought, oh, why didn't I look at that? And absolutely just got railroaded with all these other subjects this week, looking at all that. But yeah, I'll get back to the Amazonian in a minute. But going back into fashion, I wanted to actually have a look a little bit into the 1960s fashion icons. Now, I know, Mehdi, you're probably going, rolling your eyes and going, oh my God, no. What well, is she going to talk about?
Well, I admittedly know nothing about fashion as a whole, let alone 1960s specific fashion, but hey, whatever. I'm not against any specific topic. I'm happy to look at whatever content we have to review.
Yeah, well, that's all right. Well, the boys were talking about music, and we were looking into a lot of music for a while as well. I think Rick Esoteric loves a lot of the old school music and the history with some of it as well. So I thought, let's have a look at some of the actual fashion icons in the ladies as particular. So we do have a bit of a list. I don't have everyone here. I'm not going to run through them all, but maybe some of them that might have some significance and what they brought, what they popularized and what is still popular today, basically. So I often like looking back at these sort of things where time still continues on from what they've introduced into society. And how they've made it quite a significant impact, especially in the fashion world. But we say fashion, we're talking about also what popularizes what we wear every day as well. So even though these ladies may have graced the covers of Vogue, Glamour, Vogue was obviously a big one, but you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that it didn't transcend to every day, to what we have here today. And I often like looking back at that because having a little bit of fashion through my schooling life and then through my working life, it's always interesting to reflect on that sort of thing as well. So who have we got here? First cab off the rank. Let's have a look. Well, we're not going to look at all 25. We're probably only going to look at a few. So we've got Eddie Sedgwick. Now, who was she? Now, she was the original It Girl. She's from New York. She's a New York socialite. Now, she was one of those ones that the good girl gone bad. Now, we've heard this before. There's a song, Good Girl Gone Bad. I believe could have been movies. Now, she started this look. Now, what was this look entailing? It was the thick eyeliner, big chandelier earrings, the midi mod dress, the black tights, the sheer black tights, and platinum hair. And I'm like, platinum hair is so in fashion still today. Who's not wearing a mini?
If you don't mind educating us ignorant people in the room, what does platinum hair specifically refer to?
So it's almost like a silvery, it's not quite grey, So it's very, it's a really bright, it's not even blonde really, it's blonde, but it's like a silvery bright blonde, if that makes sense.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So platinum. So if you think about how platinum shines,
mm-hmm.
it's got that beautiful sheen. Yeah, that'll be what the hair is, basically like a very bright silvery sort of blonde hair. Yeah, which you've heard of platinum blonde. Yeah, it's that's the look that she put out. Who else have we got? Twiggy. Oh, did we know a little bit about Twiggy? So she was the 1960s fashion all-round supermodel. So thick eyelashes. Oh, my goodness, the thick eyelashes. Don't get me started with eyelashes. I cannot even put fake eyelashes on. It's just crazy.
She has some serious eyebrows too. Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, all these things the women look at today. I mean, my girlfriend, she's a makeup artist, and that's what they, you know, the contouring. So you've got the eyelashes to enhance your eyes, then you've got the contouring for the cheekbones, and then the smaller nose or the sharper jawline and stuff like that. So Twiggy sort of brought just the thick eyelashes, the pixie haircut. Oh, my goodness. I tell you what, I actually got that pixie haircut when I was about, let me think, 18 or 19 years old. One of the worst probably moves of my life, because I'm thinking, oh, I look like Winona Ryder. Not. And everyone thought it was really cute. I tell you what, D-Train would die if I actually had to have that pixie haircut. He would be like, no way. I still love your long hair, which I wouldn't cut. So, yeah, it is pretty funny. So who made that? That haircut actually was made popular by other celebrities throughout time. So for her in the 1960s, I believe she also had that little shift dress. My mum loved that shift dress. She actually made one as well. And she might have been one of the first ones to wear it to the races, and she caused a bit of controversy about wearing a short dress, especially like a little short sleeveless shift dress, they used to call it.
My goodness, back then. Scandalous.
Yeah, yeah. She caused a bit of scandal, that's for sure. Yeah, so that pixie haircut, it does suit some of the celebrities today. Like Winona Ryder had it, Halle Berry, she looks hot in that. Natalie Portman, Charlize Theron, and the list goes on, who made that popular. But I feel like that comes and goes, because I think there was a time when even like Miley Cyrus, who's that chick from Big Bang Theory, they all went through that pixie phase. And I'm like, I thought that pixie phase was done for. Obviously not. It obviously comes back around, just like clothing, I suppose.
Well, especially if you're people like them, who you could bring back just about any hairstyle you want and probably make it cool at the peak of your celebrity.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, that's what it is. And this is what I'm saying. It's like the fashion which started or they made popular still comes back in. So even though the styles may change a little bit on how their hair is cut and what they consider a pixie haircut, the style is still the same. So the fashion of it may have changed, but the style of it will stay the same. Yeah. And I think the boys might like this one. Anita Pallenberry. Now, she had the biggest influence on the Rolling Stones. She was the one who had the band members rocking the look. The rock chick look. Why the guys were rocking a chick look, I don't know.
I was going to say, was she paying them, or was she getting some sort of kickback?
Yeah, well, I think she was having a few flings with at least half the band.
That was going to be my next guess. So,
yeah. So I don't know. We're going to have a Rolling Stones song. We've got to find one. Is there a kick song out of that, maybe?
They're still playing. I'm not live, sure. Right? I mean,
they sure are.
We'll check after the break.
After the break.
No matter what your age,
you're listening to Conversation.
Or your affiliation.
On truthmeets.com.
Let yourself engage.
And now back to the conversation.
in the art of conversation.
And we're back on truthmeets.com, and we are talking about 1960s fashion icons. Now, Anita Pallenberry, for the guys out there that know the Rolling Stones might even know her. So she was the biggest style influence for those guys. And apparently she had flings with half of the band members.
Yeah.
So she wasn't just a groupie.
I was going to say she was like a business groupie.
A business groupie.
A very savvy businesswoman that was taking the initial form of a groupie and just worked her way up.
Worked her way up. Uh-huh. I like that.
I don't know. I'm just inserting my own imagination, but something of the sort. I mean, hey, she's the one with the last laugh for sure.
Yeah. Oh, that's all right. Well, she pulled off the rock chick look with the thigh-high boots, the skin-tight prints, and the fringing. Oh, my goodness.
Oh,
now,
so
I used to have...
whole style popular.
Yeah. I used to actually have boots that came up quite high. They're skin-tight prints. Now, I know leopard prints huge when it comes to tights. But we're talking more so that tights back then were like pantyhose, but thicker pantyhose, right? But true. Today we call tights like the exercise gear as well.
Rather than yoga pants. Right.
Yeah, that sort of style. And they come in all array of colors and prints, and people make them pretty fashionable as well. And the fringing, oh my goodness. You remember the cowboy jackets with all the fringing? The dresses that had the fringing. I used to have a dress. I used to call it my shimmy shimmy dress with all the fringing. And that was really great. When we used to do the ballroom dancing, like cha cha and stuff like that. So it was, good on you, Anita. I love the fact that you, did bring the thigh high boots, which we actually came to know as CFM, which is Come F Me Boots. Yeah.
Oh, wow. All right. I had no idea that's what those were called.
That's what they're called.
CFM boots.
Yes.
I get it.
So, you know, when, was it Joe Cocker that saying you can leave your hat on? Your hat on. Well, you can leave your boots on, let me tell you. You were taking those off. That's an absolute classic. But I used to have these lace-up boots.
Now. Perfect.
Oh, I tell you what, I used to have these lace-up boots. They used to lace up just up to the knee or a little bit above the knee. And I was not taking them off. No. Once I got them on, they were on for the whole night till the next day until I could sober up to take them off. Yeah.
Oh, there's nothing worse than going to sleep drunk with shoes on. I don't know about that.
Yeah. Yeah, that is funny though, but I do love it. I think it's hilarious, and but that's what I'm saying. Like, you can reflect back on some of these things, and we can have a little bit of a laugh about, you know, what we did in our early days in our life, and it's like, oh my goodness, did I used to wear that? Look at me, did I have that hairstyle? Or, you know, and looking back and like reading what they call the fashion icons and what they started. It's like, man, you guys started all this stuff that was meant to be like so glamorous and very chic and it would look awesome. And then most of us were like, no, we trashed it. We trashed that. We trashed that
too much
look.
Work. Yeah. And then the male perspective, or at least my perspective being a male, it's like fashion isn't something that I have to even begin to care about. So it's not something I have to really ever experiment with or play around with. I can more or less wear anything that is short of provocative and no one would ever really say anything.
Yeah. But I think when it comes to it, when people think of fashion, they think it has to be way out there. But we are influenced by our day-to-day, like what we see. So like you find most stores will bring out the same type of thing. So like with the guys, it'll still be a shirt or a type of pant, whether it's a chino or a straight leg, wide leg, baggy. The shirts are it's either a button down collar, a long pointed collar, rounder collar, whatever it is, right? So,
true. Mm-hmm.
And this is globally, like this happens globally. So fashion is global. And how we choose our style is up to our individuality. And all we just need to do is look like we can pull off the look that we look clean. This is the look that I love. And for me, it doesn't really matter what you wear. If you can pull off something that looks quite smart, elegant, you don't have to, you can even dress what we call daggy. I mean, sometimes I'm out, you know, in the old tracky dacks, as we call them, and just a t-shirt. Yeah. And I'm out with some flip flops, just walking the dog, you know, you can still add a little bit of style. Like you don't have to look like a bum on the street, you know, even the bums here on the Gold Coast, man, they get welfare money. They're walking around in brand new Nike runners. they've got, you know, new tops and caps and all sorts of stuff. So
yeah, they're living proof.
They actually dress well as well. Like they take pride in what they wear. Not all, some take pride in what they wear, regardless of their situation. You know,
so exactly. It's not too hard to wear clean clothing and have some sort of basic color scheme that isn't completely conflicting with itself.
Yeah. Exactly. And I think we were talking about the little jean shorts, the denim shorts. Now, I'm running around in denim shorts now. I have about 4 or 5 pairs and just a T-shirt, runners, and because I've been out with the dog. So, and it's like 20-something degrees, 26, maybe 27 degrees Celsius out there. So we're coming into our summer time here, but it's always relatively warm here. You know, and for me, it's just like, you know what? I like my ripped ones, but I can pull it off looking like it's a casual and I'm not a bum, you know? And I think that's what we were talking about last time.
Yeah.
It's just making sure you're in nice, clean, neat clothes. I have to wear makeup. I could put my hair up. It's fine. You're off duty. You know what I mean? You're not on duty. That's what we call it.
Exactly.
My sister's got this top that says off duty. And I'm like, what are you off duty from? She goes, the world. Yeah.
The world. And I'm like, just carrying my image to the point that everyone else holds me to. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And she's like, that way people just don't ask me anything other than what are you off duty from?
That's right. It's a conversation detractor and starter at the same time.
Yeah. That's it. Oh, it's so funny. Now, who else have we got on this list, Manny?
Well, real quick, I was going to say, I just scanned the whole list. I'm curious that Marilyn Monroe is not on there. Do you think that's by intention or, I don't know, I think she's one of the most influential people with that, or maybe not in fashion world. I just would think just most popular female icons in the 60s. She's the
I think this more fashion icon. I would like to get into Marilyn like we did with Coco Chanel eventually. She's got very interesting background. And she's
the gun here, but number 5 on the list, we have Jackie Onassis coming up, you know.
Jackie O. Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
She is a style icon. Yes. Now she brought those prim and proper skirt suits, the little pillbox hat, which I didn't know if it was really a fashion thing here in Australia with the pillbox hat. I think we did follow a lot of fashion, could be from the UK more so. I know American, we do follow some of the American fashion later. The supersized dark glasses. Ugh. Everybody loves those big dark glasses, even today. Even today.
Did she wear those before John died?
I'm not sure.
I'm curious.
Well, because what was she before? Kennedy.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, that's right. What was her name prior to that? I can't remember what her
Jackie.
Actual...
Jackie
Kennedy. She was just Jackie. Jacqueline.
Well I'm not sure if that is her maiden name that she went back
Hang
to
on.
Or not.
Wasn't she Bouvier? Was she French?
I think right. I think that's right. Let's double check. Quick Google search.
Yeah. All right. You do a quick one.
Yeah.
So she went from, I think, Bouvier to Kennedy to Onassis because this husband after that, he was Greek. Yeah. She was Bouvier?
Yep.
Yeah.
She was born Jacqueline Bouvier the first. Yeah, that's right. Because her dad is John Bouvier the third, and then her mother is Janet Lee Bouvier.
Yeah. So she was, did she come from a high, like wealthy family, socialite family?
So John Vernal Bouvier the third was an American Wall Street stockbroker and socialite. So yeah, sounds like it already from the first
student. Yeah.
And then let's look at her mother. So we have Janet Lee Bouvier, who was an American socialite. If you're labeled as a socialite in Wikipedia, I think that you're up there in some way, shape, or form.
You're up there with the money. You're up there with the money. Yeah.
So I'd say it's a safe thing to say she came from money. Yeah.
So she obviously had style anyway. That was part. It was, I'm guessing a lot of that is part to do with the way they're brought up, you know, always having that surrounded by really nice and classy things around you. So, she did pull it off. But the supersized dark glasses could have been around after Kennedy, because we all knew her as Jackie O, you know?
Right.
And she used to do the scarf around the hair, which she used to pull off. And I think the only movie that kind of reminded me of that was Thelma and Louise, where they would wear the scarf, and if they had the car with the convertible, so it would stop your hair from flying around. But these days, you know, your head covering, especially of all these other different races and nationalities, can cause a bit of controversy. So culture can play a lot.
Yeah.
Culture can play a lot of that these days as well. And I don't know why people would tend to find that offensive. But, I mean, if it is part of your culture, I suppose, and the way you dress.
Yeah, no. But I know why you'd be offended by someone else's preference. It's kind of a weird, silly thing.
And especially if it's a cultural thing as well. Yeah.
Well, at the end of the day, everyone has their own choice to wear whatever they want to wear. I mean, anyway, that's a whole other subject.
Yeah, that's it. And then Audrey Hepburn, we were talking about her before. She, 1961 was Breakfast at Tiffany's. Such a good girly movie to watch. She also did Sabrina, which Julia Ormond and what's his name? Harrison Ford and Gary Kinnear did the remake of, which I was watching. It was last week, which D-Train went, oh, my God, that's a girl's movie. You can sit here and watch it. And I said, well, it is my afternoon off. And it was actually one of my favorite movies. Yeah, I think I just love the romance behind it, and that type of – for that era as well. And Audrey Hepburn, I mean, she was just so cute. She had the little black dress. We were talking about that from Coco Chanel. The little black dress. And then she had the movie star shades, which, you know, the big, going back to the Jackie O with the big shades again. And then she had the top handle bag. So I'm like, oh, one of those little cute little bags she had as well. And oh my God, who doesn't have, I've got thousands of bags, which I only have my preference to get one. But I was laughing about the, capri pant and the ballet pumps, and we have what was popular during when I used to work, especially in the bridal, was I used to love wearing ballet flats, because I could just get around, walk around, and just wearing anything with heels at work, forget it, my calves would be dying.
Imagine. Truly,
I so it's imagine. Just like So she popularized the little ballet. The ballet pumps as
good
well.
Good for her for popularizing something that's actually good for your day to day foot.
Yeah, exactly.
The whole heel craze. Like, when did that start? I mean, when did that become a fashionably, I guess, preferred shoe?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'll have to have a look at that. But I'll tell you what, Christian Louboutin, they have got some magnificent shoes. Oh, they're beautiful, beautiful shoes. And high heels, because high heels are meant to make your legs look longer. And the way you, like, just the way a woman stands, and it's supposed to elongate your legs. It just overall,
just completes an overall look. Yeah, it's actually quite nice. Yeah. I don't know. Does your missus wear high heels?
She does here and there for formal occasions, but that's something that's always perplexed me. Just the very idea of it, you know, just when did this become popular to wear a shoe that's just absolutely the antithesis of ergonomic for your foot?
Let's have a look into the high heels. Let's have a look, see when was high heels popular. Yeah. But
that's something that very little personal experience with. So it's interesting to hear your perspective.
Yeah. No, but you know what? There's guys that even wear high heels. I mean, Prince used to wear high heels, for crying out loud. Did a man's version of it. Yeah.
Man's Let's version have a look. Of high heels. Why would you, like, that's your get out of jail free card is being a man. Why would you then choose to wear them? I guess it's a solidarity move, maybe. I don't know if I had to guess.
To give you height? I don't know. Do you ever watch Seinfeld?
I watched a few episodes, but I've never watched all of it.
Oh, because there was an episode there where George used to wear lifts in his boots, and it would make him a little bit taller. George. And he wouldn't take his boots off because he would, to his girlfriend, the girl he was dating, she would see that he was actually shorter than her.
And
he's like, I can't take these off, Jerry. He goes, but the boots look bad with the suit. And he says, I've got the lifts in him. So funny. Those guys.
Well, to George's point, it's true. Yeah. I've met very few women who've ever said that they would date someone that is their height or shorter simply because if they wear high heels, they're taller. And God forbid if that's the case. Luckily, it's not something I've had to worry about. But I really feel bad for any guy that's under 5'7". I mean, it's just got to be a hard life.
Yeah. No, that's
Do you measure by height? No, you probably do centimeters, don't you? What is 67?
No, we can say it. So,
okay.
Oh, no, because we go I'm 5'2", 5'2". So that's 158 centimeters.
All right. Gotcha. So let's see. So I personally am 5'11". So 5'11" in centimeters is 180. So 5'7" in cm is 170. All right, there we go.
Yeah, there you go. So it's, work it out that way. Yeah, so we go by, we say it like that, feet and inches, and then in centimeters. The clips are. But, yeah. Well, so
thank you, America.
Yeah, thank you, America. 1920s and 1930s, women wore pumps. That's what they called them.
Pumps.
With elongated toes and thicker heels. Detailing came through the bows at the toes or crisscross straps. It just goes into all the different types of heels. But it is definitely meant to, like, elongate the legs and make you look a lot slimmer through the feet, you know, because it would look terrible if you had like fat feet, I suppose. I don't know. get caught up in all the high heels here. Yeah. Oh, that is funny as. All right. Well, let's move on. You know who?
Yeah. Sorry. I distracted this.
Yeah, we get distracted. This is what we were talking about. We get distracted. We read one thing and then we go into something else. It's like, uh-oh.
That's right. Let's digress.
we're off topic. No, that's okay. Now, let's have a look at some of these other ones. 1961 James Bond movie, Dr. No. We have in the bikini with the knife belt, da-da-da-da, Ursula Andress. She was quite beautiful, actually. And a lot of the ladies were like, wanted to be her because she was.
I've never heard of her before.
You never heard of her?
Oh, she's in the 1961 Bond movie. Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Dr. No. Yeah. And Halle Berry did a similar outfit and came out of the water in one of the James Bond movies after the break.
No matter what you say,
you're listening to another conversation
or your preoccupation
on
truthmeets.com.
You can practice every day.
And now, on with the conversation.
The art of conversation.
And we're back on truthmeets.com. We're just talking about 1960s fashion icons. We're just looking at Ursula Andress. Just so, you know, something a little bit different from our usual doom and gloom and politics and, I don't know, cloud spraying and all sorts of other stuff. Let's look at something else. So Ursula Andress. Ursula Andress. So Halle Berry played Jinx in one of the James Bond movie with Pierce Brosnan. And she did the similar. She did the same thing where she came out of the water with the bikini and she had the knife belt on. Yeah, that was her. So that was a copy from Ursula Andress. But yeah, she was remembered by that. By that movie. Because I don't think I know Ursula Andress other than being in that James Bond movie. So that was
the only thing
that made her a bit of an icon. Yeah.
Yeah, I would hope so.
Yeah.
Who was James Bond in 1961? Who was the actor at the time?
Dr. No, was that? I'm just trying to think now. I have to look it up. Oh, was it Sean Connery? Quite possibly. I'm not sure. Yeah. Let me have. Are you quick on the? Are you faster than me on the computer?
I got you.
With Dr. No.
All right. So 1961, James Bond. So Dr. No was Terrence Young. Oh no, no, no. That was the filmmaker Terrence Young.
Yeah.
Let's see. Who's Dr. No? Sean Connery. No, no, he's the James Bond. Excuse me.
Yeah, he was James Bond. Yeah. I was right. Yeah, it was James. It was him. Yeah. And he was a very tall guy as well, talking about tall people. He was quite tall as well.
Let's see, Sean Connery.
Sean Connery. Yeah.
Let's see how tall he was.
Hey, what's going on, y'all?
Hi, James, 83. Welcome. We've just jumped into our Wednesday Arvo chats. We sort of do a little bit of a show as well. Talking about colours. But we are talking about 1960 fashion icons. We're just going through a bit of a list of some of the women and the fashion and movies. Yeah, we were just doing something a little bit different.
Usually there's nobody on this server at this time in the U.S., so that's kind of cool.
Ooh. Yeah, man. So
you can join in?
Yeah, normally around this time every Tuesday night in the U.S. Yeah, that's when we plan on talking. But very nice to have you here.
Well, it's Wednesday now.
Yeah. It's your Wednesday,
for you it is.
My Thursday.
For you it is. Oh, actually, right. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, we actually probably have three different time zones here, or two different time zones. I still have an hour of my Wednesday going.
Well, you know, I can't say that I know a whole lot about 1960s fashion icons, unfortunately.
Well, that's exactly all right. That's all right. Well, because usually, James, it's usually Beachy and I, we do a Wednesday Arvo show, and we like to talk about, we've done a show on Coco Chanel, we've talked about Victorian era, we were talking about color psychology. So we sort of weave in and out of certain subjects, and we sort of tie a lot of the subjects through what we've been talking about in the last few episodes that we've had. So yeah, you're welcome to join in. Yeah, which is good. So
Coco Chanel's a big one. That's a big one.
Yeah. So if you go into the truthmeets.com, you will find the Beachy and Verilicious chat on Coco Chanel there. About that. Yeah. So today we thought we'd pick up a little bit on the color psychology. We're talking about the rose colored glasses before and what the lenses can do. Because we were talking about blue light and we were talking about artificial blue light and how it affects us and how lenses can basically correct a few of the things that we've got going on with us. And then we thought we'd jump into, since the rose-coloured glasses were popularised by the celebrities, we thought, well, how about we just talk a little bit about some fashion icons since you know, we can sort of link up a bit of a fashion with the glasses itself. Yeah. So let's have a look. You might even know some of these icons. Let's have a look.
Well, as soon as you said rose-colored glasses, it made me think of Janis Joplin and those types. They were always there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
She's a perfect
example. So there's quite a few. Yeah, quite a few with their rose-colored glasses. Janis is on that
for most people. John Lennon was the earliest person I could think of. He wasn't wearing them back in the 60s, I don't think.
Yeah, he was. And Yoko Ono, she loved it as well.
Okay.
But, you know, interestingly with Yoko Ono, she never did color. She wore white. It's like, what's with that? And I think after John died, she reverted and she started wearing just all black. But if I was going back on the color psychology with white, so wearing white is a statement of purity, right? So it's fresh, it's clean, you know, it's a little bit young, it's very modern. So it's like, Yoko, what were you thinking wearing white, you know? She was quite petite. And she was with, and Lennon did the same though. He had, I don't know if you can go back in that picture there. So I don't know if you want to put up that on the chat there, Mehdi. Yeah. Where it's got a picture of Yoko with John Lennon, and he's wearing white turtleneck with a white suit jacket, white pants. And then he's got his coloured glasses, the round coloured glasses as well. Yeah. So they had this, I think it's, white is very stylish. I mean, for me, white is like, it's a wedding. It's for a wedding mainly. I mean, well, I have
and
a couple.
Also, what it tells you wearing white, it tells you that that person is not intending on doing any work that day. They're completely going to stay clean. They're not going to like try to get any filth upon their clothes.
Oh, yeah. I'll tell you.
Wearing white is a statement in and of itself.
It is a statement. I went to the races in Melbourne years ago, and it was, I think it was Oaks Day, which is the ladies' day there. And I had a... Who was I wearing? Not Calvin Klein. Can't remember whose suit I was wearing. But I had bought a suit and it was like a, it wasn't white. It was cream satin, like a silky satin suit, right? It was a double-breasted suit. I had the pants and everything. And I was drinking champagne because I thought if I spill champagne on it, it doesn't matter. But someone around me had red wine. And what was the first thing I did? Please don't come near me with that red wine. Do not come near me with that red wine. I would like to stay as clean as possible.
You winos, stay away from me.
So yeah, that's definitely, the thing. Definitely white, with white.
It's a chore. It's a literally a task in itself to wear white because you have to think about keeping it clean.
It's all the time. On your fellow man. Yeah.
Yeah. And if we're going to think about Yoko Ono and John Lennon, it's like, did they keep it clean? Come on, guys.
No, because weren't they wearing white?
Their life?
Weren't they wearing white in that whole bed protest?
I was about to say, like, when they were in bed for like a year or two.
Yeah.
I think it was a couple of weeks. I think it was a couple of weeks or something.
I was exaggerating, but yeah.
What did he protest mainly? It was about to do with wars and stuff, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was
doing about the. Yeah. Was it Vietnam? Vietnam War? 17?
Yes, that would have been the one. That would have been the one. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was what? Because they didn't want communism to come through? Was it to stop communism?
On paper. Yeah. But then I think John and Yoko were like, no, what the Americans are doing is bad over there and trying to ride that wave.
Yeah.
I think. I don't know. I'm not really up on all that. So 69, that was right there in that era.
That's one of his popular to criticize Vietnam, though. They're kind of lame.
That's late in the game.
I think somebody had, there's always going to be something. Like, there's always going to be something that someone's going to want to fight about or talk about or cause controversy about and all that kind of stuff. But I'll tell you what's interesting. I'm going to go off topic a little bit. Is it now in the States, between Trump and Kamala, were they talking about abortion rights or something? Just refreshing my memory here.
Yeah, that's always a topic.
Okay. Yeah. So you got the states have got the elections in November, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So here in Queensland, so in my state here in Australia, we've got the elections coming up this month, I think next week. And guess what is one of the topics? And it's never been brought up before. And I just thought it was interesting. And they've been advertising it on TV. And it's about women's rights and abortion. And I thought, what has that got to do with us here? Like, why is that? Why are they bringing that up here? Because we have a choice here. It's not like we don't have a choice, you know? And I was like, what? Why are we following? And I found it interesting that the topics, there's similar topics that is going on. And you as a country, like you're going to have a new president, right? Whereas we're just going to get a new premier of the state. So we've already got a prime minister of the country, but this is just for the state, for our state of Queensland. And their topics are very similar to the ones in America. And I'm like, but what's that got to do with us? Like, but we, that doesn't affect us in any way. I don't get it. So do you see what I'm talking about? This whole global thing where there's certain topics that would just be just going round in all these other countries. And it's like, it's totally not relevant if we already have things in place for it. Like there's no need for it, you know? So, I mean, youth crime is huge here. Cost of living is huge here. That's the two main topics here is basically youth crime and the cost of living, right? Yeah, that's it. But now they've introduced this abortion thing. There was something else. And I'm like, what has it got to do with anything? I don't get it. I don't follow, like, what they're trying to...
Yeah, and that's you know kind of more of a... Yeah, and that one is more of a moral kind of topic.
Yeah.
Right. Where here, I don't hear candidates talking about cost of living, really. Maybe they might mention it occasionally, but I feel like that should be a major topic of the conversation, as if it fucking mattered to begin with, which it doesn't.
Yeah.
but yeah, they don't talk about that here. They don't talk about cost of living. No, it's all moral. It's all moral. Everything's moral, even though it's funny, all couched in a completely immoral system to begin with.
Yeah. And another thing that's really big, and I don't know if it's big over there too, is the whole domestic violence thing.
There's not a big effort against it here.
No, we don't talk about that here.
So, this is what I'm saying. So that there's certain topics that are aligned with, which I find, I don't know why they are aligned and what they've got to do with anything really. But then, you know, we've got things like domestic violence is being played out as well, you know. But this all came open after that pandemic days, where people, especially here in Australia, in some of the states, and I came from one of those terrible straight states that were locked down, locked up, pretty much, where it became more in the spotlight later, and you know, children, either the partners, whether they're male or female, people were getting killed, and it was less like, it was just phenomenal the amount of violence that was happening. There was a man who burned his wife and his three children in a car, and let them burn, and then was not letting anyone near the car to help them out to rescue these poor people. So all these horrific stories, you know, and I think it's like, well, what is the government going to do? Because you've been talking about this for so long, and you always say we don't have enough police to do this and police don't do that. So it's like, well, what are you going to do about it? Like, why even make a topic about it? Why even talk about it? You know, because there's a lot of people that are aware that it's going on.
Yeah,
but
you're exactly
they're not
right.
actually getting any help for it. They're not actually getting any resources to help them in any sort of situation. Now, I know someone who was in a domestic violence situation. Now, she's out of it now. And the best they could do was they said to have the AVO, which is the what is it called, like a legal thing where the partners can't come within so many meters or feet or whatever it is to them. And then if they break that, then like they get called. Yeah, right. And then they get to go and see like a psychologist and all that kind of stuff. But how does that help them get on with their life? Because they're still living with the trauma. Like it doesn't, they don't feel safe in their life, you know, because they're always in constant, fear with their life, and it's hard for them to move on and have relationships with people, let alone another person to get close to them because of what they've been through. So, I mean, there's a lot of that happens, and especially if it's been a very violent one. Yeah.
I think the DV domestic violence one in particular is pretty intense because it's been such an entrenched part of Western culture for centuries. And now it's only just starting to recently be addressed. And there are things like women's shelters and certain organizations that can help women who even bother to reach out or have the resources to reach out to organizations like that. But it's one of those things. It's also entrenched with what are the religious beliefs of that couple, you know?
Yeah. And it's so much involved in it as well. So I don't think, there's just too much. I think it's just too much. And if the government tries to take on all this sort of stuff, it's like, how do you think it's going to play out? Because if they're complaining that they don't have resources for this, resources for that, why pledge for something or bring it up as a topic if you can't actually do anything about it, you know?
Well, it's because most American people respond just as well, if not better, to platitudes than actual action plans.
Yeah, it is interesting. Yeah, but anyway, politics out of the way. Go away, politics. Let's have a look.
Thanks,
at
Jean.
Yeah.
No, not at all. Your fault.
All good. Now, do you know Raquel Welch?
Of course, yes.
Yeah, 1966, 1 million years BC. She was the full sex kitten, which guy didn't like Raquel Welch.
Yeah, she's one of those
ones. I'm talking about the older guys.
You don't really hear about her talked of in terms of the larger discussion about what's happened with women in Hollywood and such. No one ever talks about Raquel Welch the way they talk about Marilyn Monroe. But she was right up there. She was definitely top tier far as. Yeah, I wonder what her story is.
Well, we can look into it. I'll go do a bit of research. But I'll tell you what is interesting, and we were touching on it. It was about, I think Beachy mentioned it in the last one, MK Ultra. And MK Ultra itself has many branches of operations, right? So you've got, now, Raquel Welch, she was the sex kitten. Now, Marilyn Monroe was also a sex kitten, but also think she was the bunny. So there's a few different ones that they all been programmed under. The recent one I heard, well, not recent, it would be a few years now, was about the monarch butterfly. And that was, what's her name? Mariah Carey. That was also Katy Perry. They're the only two that I can think of at the minute because I've got too much information floating around my head if I try and think about it.
There's been so many.
Yeah. There's so many and what those programmings entailed. And, and I guess Marilyn Monroe, because she became this classic icon, she was from that, plain Jane sort of girl who they transformed into this icon, this Hollywood icon, you know, and really unhappy sort of person in that transformation, because I think at the end of the day, she just wanted to have children. She just wanted to be a wife, and that wasn't gonna happen for her. Like, they totally destroyed her. But then, you know, she was here today. This is what I always say. Unless they're here today to tell us their story after the break.
After the break.
No matter what your age, You're listening to another conversation.
Or your affiliation.
On truthmeets.com.
Let yourself engage.
And now on with the conversation.
In the art of conversation.
And we're back on truthmeets.com, and we are talking about some 1960s fashion icons, I believe. Raquel Welch, the sex kitten with the sexy kitten hair. Gotta love it. Gotta love Absolutely. It. I wish I had sexy kitten hair. Yeah.
I was going to say, I honestly had never heard of her prior to tonight. So,
yeah. It's interesting learning. And she brought that 1 million years BC, she started that real space age type outfit as well. So, and we're seeing that flow through a lot of the celebrities, especially when it comes to the singers. So, I was just looking up today when I was posting up some things with my photographs, I was attaching some music to it. And Kylie, I thought, oh, I'll put a little bit of Kylie Minogue up. And Kylie Minogue's done all that as well. So she's done the where they're all in that robotic, what do you call it, outfits. Almost like a transhuman, you know. Who else did it? So Christina Aguilera did it. I believe Janet Jackson may have done it.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Miley Cyrus. Mm-hmm. So they've all of them throughout these stages have done these particular themes, you know, and I kind of wonder what each of those themes represent and what they mean for each of these ones, because I know that I was looking into Beyonce Knowles. Now, she is part of a program as well. I can't remember which one, but she is basically, she has different personalities. So she's got Beyonce Knowles. She's also Mrs. Carter. She's also Sasha Fierce. So it's very interesting how they can do that. They can split their personalities. And even though we go, oh, no, it's part of the entertainment, I actually believe it's part of
programming.
It's an
artistic project. It's an artistic project, okay? This is the image we're selling you. These people are so talented. They just have to channel their energies into certain little side characters, side quests, you know.
Just walking pieces.
Yeah,
I disagree.
Yeah, but I also think that that's what's happened with Marilyn as well. Because she was Norma Jean Baker. She became Marilyn Monroe, you know, but she did a full transition. Whereas these ones have different. I know Beyonce the most out of them would have the different, she's split in those different characters. Yeah, I need to find an interview. She did have an interview about it. Sorry?
Yeah, I've seen some.
Oh, sorry, James.
I totally missed it.
Go ahead with that question.
No.
Is it a progression? Well, is it
a progression. Or, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What'd well, D-Train's just put out 1 million years BC.
Yeah, that's a good picture. I can see the appeal now.
Yeah. The sex kitten.
Anyway, James,
she's
please.
On fire.
Yeah, I cut you off. Go, please take the mic.
Oh, geez. Well, yeah, I mean, I think so. Yeah, what you're touching on, talking about the different programs, like there's different sets of programs that were used on certain people. In this case, we're talking about women. Different MKUltra programs focused on, and if you studied the whole history of, you know, the work that's out there, is like there's techniques to break the psyche and create dissociative identity disorder, which I think is what some of these celebrities were dealing with. So it gets pretty deep and dark when you go that route.
Yeah, it does.
I believe a lot of that stuff is true because it's borne out in so many people's testimonies, not even from celebrities. There's people now coming out speaking on platforms like TikTok or Twitter or whatever, talking about their DID and how they came to have it, and how they're coming to unravel it. And it all lines up with the stuff that people like Fritz Springmeier was talking about in the 90s. So there's too many dots connected that you can't really ignore it, I think.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Like I was saying to Mehdi earlier, I think that we are all part of an experiment of some description, and we can be, it can be anything. It can be something we don't even know about that we're being experimented on. I mean, the most basic and simple one would have been just the chemtrails, whether people believe it or not. I mean, you know, they are putting things out there in the air. We are inhaling, ingesting all sorts of stuff. We don't know. We don't know 100% what is going on, you know. Yeah. All I just sometimes feel is that we are guinea pigs for some, in some way, shape or form. But I need to correct something here. It wasn't Raquel Welch. It was Jane Fonda that led the way in the space age cult thanks to Barbarella. So she was mm-hmm. the one in that space age. Barbarella. So my mistake. Right. Like sorry, Raquel. Yep. You and your ripped, beautiful outfit and long, sexy hair. Jane Fonda. Yep, space yes. age. Yes.
Yep, it's yep. like the so space age. One. Space age, but also kind of Neolithic with the like torn skirt and like sort of shabby appeal, but also sort of upgraded to like 1960s sci-fi.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That looks good. I do
I'm,
like
I'm
it.
Just,
what
I'm just old enough. I'm just old enough I can understand these references.
Yeah. You're just
it was originally rated X in the U.S. when it was originally released. Very few
X. Rated X.
Yeah, that's right. That's it transcends rated R. You have to truly be. Do you know, James? When did
but X it's sort of like the inflation 17? Rate. It's sort of like the inflation rate with money. So, like, if you take like what rated X was back then, that's like PG nowadays.
You're right, exactly. Same scale.
That's so funny. Yeah, I remember the first rated R movie I went to see was which one was it? With Patricia Arquette and Charlie. What's his name? Where they were the killers. They went around killing and they got off on killing people.
Yeah. Natural Born Killers.
That's the one.
There it is.
With Woody Harrelson.
Woody Harrelson and what's her face? Julie something.
Juliette Lewis. Yeah. I was like, that is so good. That was such a good movie back then.
So that one was quote unquote good back then because it was something new, but it was also something extremely more dark than what the American public was used to, kind of like Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
Where it was like just assaulting people with darkness.
pretty good scenes otherwise.
Yeah. That's it. Pretty good scene otherwise. Yeah.
That's it. It allows the darkness to particularly, I guess, permeate when you get good amongst the rest of it. But anyway, James.
Yeah. Sorry, James, go ahead.
I just think part of the reason why people thought those movies were so good at the time is because it was unlike anything we'd ever seen until that point. And it was just like so mind-blowing and mind-breaking. You can't believe you're seeing this in a Hollywood film, you know?
Yeah.
And you're just like, wow, that was amazing. Like, you just are taken out of your day-to-day experience and, like, transported to another level. But really, all you're seeing is, like, stuff about murder and rape and killing. Just like, is that really good? I'm not sure that's really good.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's really good.
Yeah, I know it's definitely different these days. I mean, I watched what did we have up the other day? I think D-Tone was watching it, The Platform, and I was like, it was like up to number 4 or something. I remember seeing the first one and I thought, oh yeah, that was okay. But now it just drags on. I'm like, it makes any sense how you get up to the 3rd, the 4th, the 5th. It's like Saw. I don't know if you ever saw that one.
Yes, exactly. Like now, that once was they done, made the 2nd, you're just like, what? I thought we saw
that. That was done in here in Australia. Now that guy, it was a young Aussie guy. I was working for a designer in a suburb in Melbourne back then, and we had to dress his mum for one of the events. And and I was like, oh, wow, oh, your son does the da-da-da. And the first was fine. Then they went on and on and on and on. And it just got, you just was like, oh, really? This is just another crap, like, movie. Like, it just became, you know, it, there's no more original ideas. It just became, yeah, I wasn't, no more, not interested in it anymore. You know what I mean? You lose interest in it. So it's just wasn't going to happen.
Was Saw Eli Roth, or was that? No, that was Hostel.
I can't remember his name.
Was Eli Roth.
I can't remember his name now. I'd have to look back on it. But yeah, I'm not very fast because I'm on my phone here, so I'm not very fast in trying to Google things and pull everything up. So sorry.
Regardless, the point stands true, yeah. Though. I saw there was a Platform 2 the other day and thought, how can you even make a Platform 2 with the ending of the first Platform movie being as decent as it was? And
yeah.
They always find a way if there's enough hype around the first one. If it was successful enough, they'll make a sequel regardless of how shitty and nonsensical it is.
Yeah, and you know what was also interesting? Like, someone, you've heard of Mr. E on, he comes on the Fakeologist channel sometimes. He gets...
Name rings a bell.
Have interviews him. Yeah, he's the guy who talks about the transvestites and the trainees and all that.
Well, I probably don't know him then.
Yeah. Anyway, he was mentioning.
I know him from YouTube. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. Anyway, he was mentioning. I think there was a mention. I'm not sure if it was through him or someone else, but I don't know. Somewhere along the chats a while ago, they had mentioned Megan Fox, right? And anyway, I watched this YouTube thing of her saying, "Don't you know I'm a tranny?" Like that. And I'm like, "No way, she is, right?"
Which and way I'm like, is she now a man? Is what she's saying, or she was always a man originally?
Well, let me tell you, I enjoyed watching The Expendables, right? Because I'm like, that was great, but they did 2, they did 3, and then they did 4. Oh, my God, no way. Like, when they keep doing these movies. Anyway, she was on Expendables 4, and I thought, we'll give it a watch, because I'm a bit of I like Sylvester Stallone, but, you know, I was like, after the first one, the second one, I'm like, come on, you know, making more of these Expendables, becoming beyond, right? So I thought, we'll watch number 4. So she was a bit of a lead character in this one. And I was, the first thing that stood out, she had an Adam's apple. I was like, no, no way. She's not a guy. Like, seriously, come on. I saw her in Transformers. And what, hang on, what's happening? Is she a man? Is she really a man? Like, she was married to Brian Austin Green. They had 3 kids. Did she really have 3 kids? What am I seeing?
What do you make of that? What do you think? What do you think the explanation is?
I don't know. So I was just, I looked through the photos and I was like, there's a picture of her and Brian Austin, and she's got the belly, the pregnant belly. She's wearing a bikini top and a skirt, and she had the pregnant belly out. And I thought, is it her? I mean, it could be a suit. You can't tell. It's a photo. Do you know what I mean? Because the only people that would that would know what it is would be her, Brian, and maybe the photographer, you know?
Right. But as you pointed out, we would have noticed in any prior film that she was in that she had an Adam's apple, number one. And then number two, if she had 3 children, I mean, that lends a little bit more credibility to her natural state that her sex is. But I don't know. It's so hard to tell in this day and age.
Oh. And then she was on another movie. It was really bad, but you couldn't stop watching it because it was that bad. It was called Rogue. And it's still there. And I'm like, okay, so she's now picked up roles where she's being like the head, what do you call it? The main character, right? And she's playing like, the main lead also in leading a task force of some description. So essentially she's like ex-ranger, or she's like a Air Force Navy SEAL type chick, right? And I'm like, are you serious? Come on. You know? And then this one here, like, you know, I'm like, she looks nice. She's still got that look. That's Megan Fox, and then you look at her neck, and then that's all I can see is the Adam's apple on her neck. I'm like, I'm absolutely like shattered, like, and I can't like delete that from my vision.
Yeah, great to look at here in the pictures. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think too much about that one way or the other.
No.
Did she ever claim? So you said she claimed to be trans?
Yeah, but I don't know if she said it jokingly or not. Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
Yeah, where she was like, didn't you know?
She wasn't really like,
I'm a tranny.
It wasn't like a virtue signal. It was just kind of like a joking tweet, just like a attention thing.
Well, and that might be one of those things where they're actually responding to some of the online stuff that's out there.
Mm-hmm.
Because that stuff definitely comes across their radar. It has to.
Yeah.
You know, their agents, their handlers are like, so this is what a certain group of people are saying about you. And, you know, maybe some people are given a little bit of freedom to even speak on that. So it might be one of those things, too, where, you know, you never know. That's why I don't really delve into this area of celebrity. It's like, because none of us really know. None of us really know.
Yeah, but it's changed. Like, I mean, you used to watch it because we enjoyed, they were actors, you know what I mean? They were there to entertain. We enjoyed the movies. We like this. We like that. Now it's got to be more in depth. There's always something in darker side. There's this. There's that. And it's like why can't I just ignore that? Like why can't I just not see that and just see that she is acting in a movie and it's, you know, good or bad. She's there entertaining. You know what I mean?
I think you just
like, need now. Why can't now you it's in my it, head
right?
Because
it's supposed to be a distraction, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and it's like. But in my mind, it's bugging me. You know, it's bugging me. And then all I can see is this Adam's apple when I look at it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, this has ruined me.
it definitely bugs you out. Yeah, it definitely bugs you out. Sort of like how Tom Hanks is like implicated as being one of these really evil guys, right? Even though he's always played in his movie roles, he's always played like a really good guy for the most part. So now you're supposed to think like, oh, Tom Hanks is one of these, you know, Satanists or whatever. It's like,
Where do you land on how he most likely actually is as far as where his morality stands?
I think they're all fucked. In my opinion, I think they're all fucked.
That's the way I would look at it too. If we know their name and they've been in multiple films that we can recognize, they're probably
It's not looking good for any of these people at this point. So, and I'm okay with that. I'm fine with that. I hope more truth continues to be exposed about all these folks. Yeah. Yeah. I love it, honestly. I'm here for it. I can't wait for more stuff to come out. I can't wait for people to fall from grace. I think it's great.
Well, that's the real thing, right? If they ever actually do fall from grace. The whole Epstein situation was really disappointing to see, especially when you look at Kevin Spacey now having this little comeback tour.
Yeah, I mean, you got to look at like the projects these people have been involved with and the content, the subject matter and
the money it generated.
Well, you know, that's what they all say as well, like when listening to that that other podcast. And everything, does everything come back to money? It's got to come back to money. It's got to come back to something.
By and large,
you know,
some
sort of power, some sort of something like that. You know, because what else are you going to get out of it?
Yeah, that's a good question. For Kevin Spacey, it almost seems like he's a proof of concept study that we're witnessing. Like, hey, can we take someone who just objectively at every corner that we can really isolate, he was acting as a bad human. We have multiple people testifying to him being a bad human. We have him documented traveling across Africa with Epstein, and here he is now with this bullshit stop story about him making mistakes and he's sorry for his actions that may or may not have hurt people and people.
Yeah, but he was in American Beauty, right? He was in American Beauty, which was ostensibly a quote unquote great film. You look at the subject matter of that movie and it's fucking creepy, dude. It's just creepy. That's all.
Yeah, but isn't that a little bit after the break?
We'll look it up during the break. Yeah.
No matter what you say, You're listening to Conversation.
Or your preoccupation.
On truthmeets.com.
You can practice every day.
And now, back to the conversation.
The art of conversation.
And we're back on truthmeets.com. And we're just talking about actors in general. Fall from grace, maybe, maybe not. Is it money? Is it power? We don't know for sure what is going through the heads of these people. Now, Mehdi, what did you find about Kevin? Was it Kevin Spacey we were talking about?
Yeah, in the American Beauty film. So it's
American Beauty, that's the one.
Yeah, American psychological black drama comedy film. That's what they describe it, a black comedy drama. But if you've seen it, please give a little nutshell, either of you. I was just looking into it.
Yeah, I have seen that one. He's obsessed with this young, but to me it's a little bit like the Lolita, because he was obsessed with this young woman. Yeah, and he just kept fantasizing about her. So it's very
sounds like a weird one.
Yeah, it's a weird one. Yeah.
It's a weird one, but at the time when it came out, it was lauded as like one of the greatest modern movies of all time.
Really interesting. Yeah. And here we are, 2024, and I've never heard of it, so that can't be true. Well, maybe it's true. I'm just a loser, but I would like to think that's not the case.
Yes. Oh, who knows? I don't know. But for me, it was like, well, it was supposed to be like sexual grooming, really, when you think about it. Lolita was a little bit like that as well.
There was grooming aspect too,
obsessed with the younger girl, and it's just a little bit perverse in that sense, you know, or they're thinking about what they're going to do or how they're going to groom him to how they like it, and it's done behind like the wife's back or the actual mother, even if it's not their biological daughter or whatever. It's a bit gross when you think about it. Yeah,
seeing this whole Wikipedia article about the multiple interpretations of the actual theme as the first article, like the first bullet point is multiple interpretations, and you already know they're up to some weird stuff. Anyway, I'm not sure if I'm going to watch it, but I'll look at proper.
Yeah, source. I don't know about that one. I think that came out the same year as The Matrix, too, like 99.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
Yeah, and that was a big movie, too. Actually, that took me a while to cotton on to The Matrix. I actually fell asleep the first time I watched it. And I was in cinemas as well. I was like, oh, this is going really well. Yeah. They're like, did you enjoy that movie? And I'm like, yeah, I wasn't really into it. Like, it just didn't make any sense. Followed that white rabbit, and I went rabbit right to sleep, baby. You know, it was pretty funny. It took me a while to sort of cotton on to like what was behind it, what was going on. Because, you know, like I said, I want to go and enjoy a movie. I don't want to have to think about what it means and the hidden agendas and blah, 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 blah. It's like, can I just enjoy a movie? It's going to entertain me, take my mind away from like what I'm doing day to day, stress, whatever it is. I just want to see it. I want to be entertained for a little while. I don't have to go thinking about what this means, what that means, and all that. It's just like, forget it. It took me a while.
I think Charlie Kaufman movies like Being John Malkovich or The Orchid Thief are good for that. If you really want a movie like that, those are good. But yeah, The Matrix and stuff like that. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
Matrix 2, Matrix 3, definitely
not a good movie critic.
Yeah, and then everybody's like, "But we like live in a matrix, isn't our life like
that?"
That's
my problem with The Matrix. People compare it to reality way too much. It's like, first of all, it's a movie. Second of all, sure, it could be some sort of kind of metaphor, allegory to what we're dealing
with. Well, and it's deeper than that, because it's alleged in some circles that the Wachowski brothers, then now sisters, it's alleged that they ripped the plot line from The Matrix from this black woman sci-fi author. But also beyond that, there's a tie-in to the stuff David Icke was writing in the early 90s. And even more than that, there's other conspiracy literature, literally books called The Matrix, volume 1 through 7, that touches on ideas exactly like humans being used as batteries. That started being published in 1988. So
1988. And then George Orwell wrote that, the book, the 1984, which everybody's like, oh, we live in that sort of thing, scenario.
When did he write that? You know, do you remember? Was it 50 something?
George Orwell? Let's have a look.
Yeah, I can't remember. Let's see, 1984.
It's like 56 or something like that.
Yeah, it sounds right. So it was, 49 actually. Interesting.
1949. Yeah.
June 8th, 1949.
So like this idea, this idea that the Matrix was playing on existed long before those guys conceived of that script.
Yeah.
That's right. And then the reference to the blue pill and the red pill, and then Alice in Wonderland, because it was the white rabbit, and then there was the pill. I was like, okay, I'm not making any connections here. Like, please stop.
Well, that'd be a fun topic to go into one day. Both Alice in Wonderland, The Matrix specifically, and then those links, because there are some interesting ones. Alice in Wonderland is like one of the original kind of...
One of the original ones,
ones that, where someone's kind of alluding to something greater that's happening around us that most people...
Yeah, they basically took that concept and turned it into like... what's the word? Not like steampunk, but like neo-Tokyo kind of sci-fi realm with advanced filming techniques for the time. It's like the concepts they were working with was nothing original. So I don't think anyone can honestly say that The Matrix honestly like put out anything that wasn't already in the cultural consciousness. It was just, let's repackage these ideas with flashy filmmaking.
Yeah, but if you look, I mean, I used to watch a bit of Japanese anime as well, and then they Americanized it by making the movies out of it and stuff like that. And you're like, there's a lot of futuristic stuff in there that I want to believe. Like, I just put something up about... Elon Musk's his Optimus is robots, and I was like, well, that's iRobot coming alive. I mean, that was just a fictional movie story, and they want to make this come alive, you know. And I think they want to blur this. I feel like they're just blurring this reality between like what is entertaining and what is real. And you know, all of a sudden, like our life becomes surreal, you know. It's not really real, but it's all in our mind. And if you have that mind frame where you're easily influenced and you can easily get drawn into that sort of stuff, then you've got no hope of seeing what really is going on, because you're living in a virtual world that you don't even know what's actually real and what's not, you know.
Very true, very true.
It's very interesting.
Yeah, I just find it hilarious how people still reference the Matrix movies as like, it was a pivotal point in a way, as far as, you know, public acceptance and understanding of such ideas, but also it was very unoriginal.
I was about to ask, had you ever heard of simulation theory prior to The Matrix? Because I feel like that movie more or less created that idea for people to latch onto.
Pretty much, it did. It certainly wasn't as popular as it is now.
Okay,
before that, but also I have a pretty kind of unique perspective because I've been exposed to all kinds of crazy new age woo woo media and stuff before. So I realize some of the things I'm saying don't necessarily have any frame of reference for some people on here.
No, it's cool. I mean, I think we have a good, good mashup of experiences between very falling asleep, me being mildly entertained, and then you having a deeper insight. It's a good, good trio.
That was good. But having a look at that belief, the simulation theory it's an actual belief system. In 2001, philosopher Nick Bostrom proposed a simulation argument which suggests that if a civilization becomes capable of creating conscious simulations, it could generate so many simulated beings that randomly chosen conscious entity would almost certainly be in a simulation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. And then it's so like,
at that point, continue, please.
Yeah. No, and then it's like because it's overseen by a higher being. But see, but isn't life like that anyway? Because if you, if you believe in a higher source, so I'll just quickly, just not talking about whether we're religious or not, but we have a belief system that God is our higher source, right? And he is a creator of what we have around us, and he's our creator. So we came from dust according to the biblical, from Genesis, he created man from dust. And then, you know, if we die, we go back to dust sort of thing. So he's our creator. He's our higher source, right? He's that. So all these basically seem to me, they've just almost done a copycat of having somewhat a higher being overlooking a hyper-realistic computer simulation, right?
Yes.
So they've just gone from reality to a computer simulation.
Yes.
And they've just changed what we have or what we know in reality to now we have in this virtual world.
Yeah, exactly. It's like what is
and
reality?
Sort of filling in the gaps of what mainstream science hasn't explained yet with a sort of technological explanation that is somehow apart from the God of the Bible and things like that, but still the same exact concept.
Mm, they're following the same concept. Yeah. So they've got to come from somewhere. Like all this has come from somewhere. It doesn't just come out of someone's imagination. Well, it may have, but they've obviously thought of something. It's obviously a working process.
I think there's some credit to the phrase that art likes to mimic reality and vice versa.
So yeah, life really imitating knows. Art.
Mm. Yeah, exactly.
And vice versa. Yeah. Yeah, we do see a lot of that. Yeah. And I think now with when they're saying that there's a lot of mental illness, we're talking about the, you know, people being on some sort of spectrum.
DID.
Yeah, it's, and, you know, I guess Big Pharma's got a lot of business when it comes to giving people or supplying people with the with the drugs that they need to level themselves out. Just imagine, level yourself out.
To what?
Why would you need to level yourself out? Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that right there, I think, is one of the keys that tells you something is askew, in that you have this giant pharmaceutical industry pushing all these mind-altering, literally psychotropic drugs that are okay. But then there's this class of other drugs that are not okay that come from nature. That right there is a little bit of a quandary of like...
Huge one.
So why are we doing this and not that? What is the point of the stuff you're trying to sell me versus the stuff I can grow in my yard?
Yeah, exactly. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. But it's it though. And I found out recently that in Australia, the state of Tasmania actually has like its own poppy field. Like, so... What? So Big Pharma or whoever it is, we're going to call whoever it is that's doing all this, they've obviously got places around where they're going to be getting, where they've got this their initial ingredients to make their, you know, it's just crazy.
Whatever else
it is. And yeah, and it's, and why not have people being mentally ill? Why not have some sort of mental illness? Why not have them on some sort of spectrum? Because we're just going to give them a pill for this and a pill for that. And you know what the colors are? They're red or they're blue, sometimes white, right? So it's just too crazy sometimes when I think about it. And I mean, I think Rick even brought it up on one of his chats about the poppy. Like, why on Remembrance Day, the 11th of the 11th, and on the 11th hour, on the 11th minute, we stay for a minute in remember, like nobody works, like everybody stops, right?
Really?
They do this here in Australia. Yeah. Like, it's really
what's
weird.
The on record reason, what are you remembering or supposed to be remembering?
The fallen soldiers or whatever it is, right? Because it's Remembrance Day. But then he said about the poppies, right? And I thought, oh, okay, that's interesting that they did choose a poppy, because isn't a lot of what the wars, some of the wars that they're having, supposed wars they're having, or what they're trying to protect, is to do with poppy fields and all that sort of stuff? Like,
they have that in England too, the Poppy Day. It's like, yeah, same thing.
So with us here in Australia, on the 11th of November, on the 11th hour, on the 11th hour, right? Usually we have to, everybody stops what they're doing for 1 minute. And they do the bugle thing. They play it over the speakers if you're at work or wherever. And then after that's finished, everybody resumes as normal. And I'm like, that is so weird. It's just such a weird thing. Like that we're doing, you know?
Yeah, that's a ritual. That's one of those things you just don't question until you look into it further.
Yeah, that's crazy. And, you know, the thing is, I never really understood all that sort of stuff when I was younger, because I had family who were in some sort of military, and whether or not they went to places, I have no idea, because I don't associate with any of them. Now I've forgotten what I was going to say. Yeah. So when I think about that sort of stuff, it's like I've never really asked them, have they been in any sort of combat, in any this and any that, you know? And it's, I just find it weird that each year we're remembering that we have days to remember these people, right? And I get it if it means a lot to some of the families that have lost loved ones and so forth. But what did they really do? Because the government doesn't care about them. I mean, they haven't really done anything for them, because it's usually the RSL, the Lions Club, these are the places here in Australia that are actually supporting the families. The government doesn't really care about them. And it's the people that are upholding this sort of vigil to remember these people. But we don't really know what some of them actually did, and whether or not they were actually in a battle, or what they were really fighting for. I mean, was it just part of patriotism, you know, like was it a nationalistic thing, like I have to do it for my country? But what are you really doing for your country? Because does your country really care for you? And who is your country?
Exactly.
You know,
right.
Do you consider the country the politicians? You know, it's one of those things that for me, I find it's hard to process sometimes. But then I also feel sorry for the ones that have lost loved ones, and it's hard to imagine what it's like for them to go through a process like that, because, you know, if you lose someone you love, grief and all that, it's very difficult. It's a hard thing to process unless it's happened to you, you know? And it sort of saddens me when that sort of happens. But then after the break.
And the break says, screw you and your sadness.
No matter what you say,
you're listening to Conversation,
or your preoccupation,
on truthmeets.com.
You can practice every day.
And now back to the conversation.
The art of conversation.
And we're back on truthmeets.com. We're just having a general chat now, just about things that may affect us in life, just normal things that come up in conversation. Sometimes it's a little bit conspiratorial, sometimes not, sometimes a little bit political, sometimes not. Sometimes we just have a bit of fun and just talk about fun stuff. Yeah. So anyway, let's get away from that. And I want to go back to who is our next person on that list. Let's have a look at Brigitte Bardot. She was the world famous French bombshell. Da, da, da. The Let's word see. Bombshell.
She, yeah, I was going to say, what number is she? She is. Is she on the list?
She's on the list. Yeah.
Oh, where is she?
I didn't write down one, so I just skipped a few. I did the 1-2 skip a few. Yeah.
What was your name? Brigitte Bardot?
Brigitte Bardot.
Okay, here she is. Oh, I've never seen her before. Interesting.
I was going to make a really off-color joke about the list. I think I'll stay away from that. But
no. Now you have to make.
No, it. I think you know where I'm going. I think
I
all
don't.
I really don't.
No,
we'll just skip on. So, what about Brigitte Bardot?
Yeah, Brigitte Bardot. So she's French. You know, she's French. Likely promiscuous. Yep.
Yeah. Well, the only thing that I mean, there was a. She was just that bombshell, that French bombshell. She had the blonde hair, the blue eyes, she had the body. She was just able to just pull anything off. And it was just, and she had that accent, you know, which is like that love, like French I always associate with like love, you know, that beautiful, lovely accent. I've got a friend who she's French and I always go, speak to me in French, please, you know, and she'll teach me a few words. So, but there's something sexy.
Yeah.
Well, there can be something sexy about it, you know, there can be something sexy about it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But she was another one of those just famous faces that came about that period as well. I did miss someone, though. Do you know who I missed? The certified 60s icon of all time. Sure.
Oh, sure. Yes, absolutely.
With her black-rimmed eyes like a raccoon. She had the outlandish prints, the wide flared trousers. You know, she launched the hippie look. She was part of Bono and Cher.
Hey, she's still
Sonny and Cher. Sonny and Cher.
Isn't Bono her surname?
Yes, it's Sonny.
Sonny's surname is Bono.
Sonny Bono.
Yeah. It is.
But if you say Bono and Cher, it conjures up an entirely different image.
Sorry,
you two. Cher and Sonny Bono was their name, I believe. Yeah.
So can you?
Goodness gracious,
just, like,
me! I'm getting all muddled up here. I think I need another fresh cup of coffee to keep me going.
So can you just like quickly hit me up to what the color coding thing you were talking about earlier is? Because were you saying that like a lot of these icons have certain colors schemes associated with them and their fashion?
No, we did that last time with Prince and purple. Yeah. So what we were talking about was rose-colored glasses and what the term of rose-colored glasses meant. And then we just went into like how it became fashionable, even though there was some actual health benefits to wearing colored lenses and pink lenses in particular we were talking about, which is improving your depth of field, sharpen the contrast, and even reduce blue light effects. And we were talking about blue light last time, and like the sun emits blue light and we're in constant blue light naturally. But what we were looking at last week was artificial blue light and how we're surrounded by artificial blue light. You know, it's on our phones, it's on our computers, like everywhere we are, it's
every
artificial light. And then if you go into shopping centers, like if there is no, you can't see the outside, so there's no windows, you can't see what's happening outside. We're also talking about the casinos had the same thing. So you lose your sense of like whether it's day or night. And then you're in an array of colors when you're shopping as well. So like what's attracting you and like why are colors attracting you? And in particular, when we were talking about blue light, we were talking what it can do to our health. And there was some really bad things that it does to our health. And then we teamed it up with like, you know, the alcohol, and all that sort of stuff. So we sort of just phase in and out of the color psychology and we sort of bring it in a roundabout way, but we sort of try and tie in a lot of our topics, each week to, so we sort of have a flow of something. But yeah,
it's
so
an organic
we
had progression. The,
and we were just trying something a little bit different than your normal conspiratorial talk.
Doom and gloom, yeah.
Yeah, and the doom and gloom. So we wanted to really sort of bring something else to the table and to have a conversation. And I'm glad that we can do this on truthmeets.com. So I'm just thank you, Valisette, for putting up this platform for us to be able to have conversations about anything and everything, which is quite good. Within reason,
definitely good.
Within reason. Yeah. So when we were talking about the glasses, we were saying how they were popularized by celebrities. And then we had the photos on the show notes there. We had Miley Cyrus, we had Bono, we had Elton John, Matthew McConaughey, the list goes on, right?
Yeah.
Perfect. So, and then we thought, well, we could tie this into like fashion, and because we had talked about, you know, so we're tying the glasses with the fashion because that's where it was going. And then we had talked about Coco Chanel, so we thought let's look into 1960s fashion icon. But the other thing about those rose-colored glasses and the quote that was known as to wear rose-colored glasses. Was a figure of speech. So in 1840s, it became a figure of speech. Mm-hmm. And the first known publication of this phrase was said to be from a novel. It was called Tom Brown at Oxford, written by a gentleman called Thomas Hughes. Now, Thomas Hughes was born in 1822 and he died in 1896. Now, he was also growing up through and during the Victorian era, which is 1820 and 1914, which we had touched on about Queen Victoria and the Victorian era on one of our other talks as well. So you can see how this is sort of all, we're sort of all linking things up here, not in a very loose sort of way. So, you know, if anyone's interested in a particular topic, they can go, oh, I heard them talking about this and let's have a look at the Victorian era when this happened, or let's look at that when that happened as well.
Yeah,
that's
exactly right.
Yeah, somebody sent me
a tangents. Yeah.
Well, I was sent a link to listen about Francis Bacon as well. And his link, I still haven't finished listening to that podcast, but I will make some notes in regards to the Victorian era on that one. And eventually that will come through and we'll flow that through on one of our chats as well. We do have heaps that we can talk about. Like, just it doesn't really matter where it goes. Yeah, we're just making conversation flow.
Yeah, I mean, roses in general.
Yeah.
Roses in general are pretty esoteric when you get into especially like precious minerals like rose quartz or even plants like wild rose and rose hips, nutritional benefits of those. The roses have been a big one throughout modern history, especially in esoteric realms as well. So it's interesting that rose-colored glasses became a thing as though like you're taking in your sight through the prism of a rose, something like that.
Yeah, and also red we also know is associated with hunger. So we see things like most classic example would be McDonald's with their red and gold. So red signage. So, yeah. And also in color therapy, so if you're looking at the healing process, you would look at red as part of healing. So it's healing like for your blood, anything that's red for your organs, that's part of the color therapy. I'm not going to go into that today. That is another big sort of topic about healing.
Beets. I mean, beets. Don't get me started on beets.
Yeah. So there's so many things. And like, you know, different foods as well. Like they say, you know, your walnuts, if you eat walnuts, it looks like your brains. Is that good for your brains? I was talking about carotene. So carrots, especially we were looking at for your eyes, you know, leafy greens, great for your eyes. So just all the things that we can associate. So the green, when you look at green, is normally associated with health and health food. So if you look at health food places, a supermarket, health food markets and stuff like that, their signage is generally green. So we associate green with health, healthy. So,
oh yes, yes.
There's there's a lot of color association happening there as well. Yeah. So yeah. So hopefully that keeps you up to date with us, James. And
okay, all good. Thank you. Thank you for that exposition. I appreciate it.
We can link you in if you want to read some of the show notes that we've got, or even listen through. They're not long chats that we have. Mainly maybe an hour, 2 hours, just on certain topics. We'll come in and out of them as well. And if you want to link through like the psychology of gambling, we did link that again last week, because we had forgotten to talk about clocks and why there was no clocks. And then the blue light, we linked into blue light and stuff like that. So yeah, coming in and out of those conversations, look, not necessarily mean you have to know anything and everything. I just think it's interesting that we all, like to search about certain things that interest us and what it does to our health, even if it's just a little bit of fun, a little bit of entertainment. I think it's always good, and it's nice when we can bring something to the table when we come here and we just have a chat about stuff in general. But you know what I wanted to end up on, what I wanted to finish up on? Now, most of you might know my name, Verilicious, but my actual name is Verushka, right? Now, in the 60s, 1960s, there was a fashion icon. She's 85 years old now, and her name was Verushka, spelt differently to mine, but spelt the same. Now, she was born Vera Gottlieb Anna Gräfin von Lenhof Steinhardt. Now, she is German, 6'3". She was very tall. Yeah, very, very tall. She graced the covers of Vogue and Glamour magazine. And up until a few years ago when she retired, she was still very much in this industry, part of this industry. Now, she had created some of the most iconic fashion images with her in it was done by some of the photographers. People who are into photography might know Irving Penn, Stephen Marcel, and Richard Avedon. Doesn't really matter whether or not you know that. It's fine. But this lady, there was a little bit of controversy behind her as well. So her mother was actually a countess and her father was a German aristocrat. Now, it was said that her father was actually a member of the German resistance. And he was executed when she was 5 years old because he was involved in the plot to assassinate Adolf Hitler. It's called the 20 July plot, which is 20th of July, 1944. Now, whoever's into numbers, if you want to look into numbers, that's your thing, that's fine. Whether it meant anything, it doesn't really matter. But this lady, 1967, Life magazine named her the girl everybody stares at. So, as I was growing up, people who knew this model would say, were you named after her? Were you named after her? No, I wasn't. My great-grandmother's name was Verushka. It's not her. It's not this German model. So, and she was actually Russian. So I just find it very interesting that she's been around for a long, long time and not a lot of people actually knew her because she didn't run the circles that all our other icons did, like, you know, like Raquel, like Bridget, like Cher, like Jane Fonda, like Audrey Hepburn. So she, they ran very different circles. She was all, and being so tall, She had led this new direction in the 60s fashion by being a pioneer in the new skinny chic phase, right? So, and I see that today. And this is what we're saying is like what we see back then and what we're seeing as a style or even fashionable. So fashion changes, but the style stays the same. So we still have this skinny chic thing that's going on. But what we're trying to, what we're looking at these days, sometimes what actually I was going to refer back to, is it Billy, not Billy Idol, David Bowie with that androgynous look and that really skinny thing, you know. So it went from women to men, back to women, now back to women, men, and people who don't identify with whatever. So it doesn't really matter, but just from the 60s to now, we still have this these icons that have led the way in some sort of ideal fashion style, which is quite bizarre. Yeah.
Where do you land on her being a potential spy?
Well, see, I don't know. There's not much information about that, other than the fact that her father was the one, right? So. I mean, I just think it's a very romantic thing to say that she's,
that's true. Yeah.
That, you know, I think it's very, it's a romantic thing. And I think it goes back to when I was talking to you about like the Amazonian women, because she was considered like wild Amazonian spirit. Like she said, it was said of her that she had this wild Amazonian spirit. And she held a global gaze of desire, being 6'3". Now, that's a pretty tall, bloody woman, right?
Yeah.
Now, I don't know how – are you – Mehdi, you're not 6'3". James, is James 6'3"? Yeah. She's taller than you, right? You're 5'11"?
She beat you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's taller than me. I'm 6'1". So, yeah, there's not – it's like, yeah – the any woman over like 5'11" is considered Amazonian, really, right? Unless they're like, I don't know, that whole term Amazonian is kind of wild because that's very dated.
Yeah. The romanticizing of the word, you know, Amazonian. It's like, ooh, you know. It's like she must be very exotic. Yeah, exactly.
A lot of Europeans were kind of in that under 6 foot range of height. So, except for the Nordics. And then you could get into like alien sort of parlance where you talk about the tall white race of Nordic aliens, right? So there's that thrown in there too.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know about that.
No.
Sorry.
No. I'd like to hear more.
Maybe another time.
Maybe another day we'll talk about aliens. Yeah. But, I just thought she had a very interesting, just being in the fashion industry, that's all. But she was basically just a model, and she was well known in that phrase. But the thing that stuck, or that little bit of blemish that she had on her, was the fact that, you know, it was that her father was part of the German resistance he was involved in that plot to kill Adolf Hitler. But her father was actually killed when she was 5 years old in that sort of thing. So there's no real story behind it. Like, I don't know. I mean, Wikipedia, Google, they can tell you whatever to try and find a lot of these stories. Once again, we have to delve into what this person's life was like when she was growing up and what she probably went through as a child. But look, you know, the name change, the moving to the States and becoming a model and all that kind of stuff, you know, people like to get away and break away from things in their life, and I think we see a lot of that happening. And look, I like the romantic part of, you know, that whole Amazonian or that whole sex kitten and all that sort of stuff. I just feel like it's very romantic in a sense. It's a little bit fun. It's something we don't really look at today because everybody's been pushed to some sort of agenda, whether it's right or wrong, whether we believe in it or not. It doesn't really matter. After the break.
No matter what your age.
You're listening to another conversation.
Or your affiliation.
On truthmeets.com.
Let yourself engage.
And now, on with the conversation.
In the art of conversation.
And we're back on truthmeets.com. So, you know, today we had a little bit of a mishmash of subjects, but I think it was, I don't know, I had a bit of fun with it, you know, going from our having a look through some of the things with our rose-colored glasses, talking about some of our icons, talking about the Matrix, and we're talking about maybe Alice in Wonderland, and yeah, I think it's good. What do you guys
Fun to drop in. Nice to meet you. First time here, first time listener, first time caller. I'll be back next time, maybe, if I catch you again, but yeah. I'm going to head out.
Okay. Yeah. So, yeah,
hope to catch you again.
Yeah. We'll catch you again. Yeah. So thanks, James. So Mehdi, I think we'll just wrap it up today. So we look forward to having Beachy back hopefully next week. Hopefully she's feeling better, and we will see what we come up with next week and what fun things we can talk about. I hope, you know, everyone's had a little bit of fun there just listening to us babble on to whatever it is.
I can't believe it. You're gonna smash mouth.
Rollo?
No, I love you.
What were you gonna say before we go?
I just thought you were gonna blow me off.
No,
we are doing a little bit of a show, Rollo. So, yeah.
No, I know.
Yeah,
I love your show, and I've made notes. I've got notes all here.
Cool.
Yeah, do you think I'm a joker all the time?
No, not at all. Big time.
When it comes to what you were talking about before, obviously, when it comes to the final solution.
Well, I appreciate you at least biting your tongue despite you wanting to talk when we were finishing everything up here. So I do respect you for that.
You just press the dump button.
Yeah.
Sorry.
All right, Rollo. Next time, if you want to make up some notes, Rollo, I think you are going to be doing a show. We can promote your show with Rick and Rollo.
No, it's not a show. It's not a show.
Yeah, Rick and Rollo, I believe. Yeah. Anyway, I believe you were going to talk about some icons, not icons as well. I can't remember now. But anyway. Look forward, guys, we have a few shows on truthmeets.com. So we have got Rick's Be Told. We have Rick and Rollo. We also have Bongversations. And you have Wednesday Arvo with Beachy, Mehdi, and Merylicious. So thank you, guys, for today. And Mehdi, we'll catch you next week as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
And hopefully, like I said, Beachy,
we look
forward to you coming back. And, we'll catch you guys next time. All right. See you for now.
Till the next one. Take care.